We are all too familiar with relationships that are out of balance. Relationships where one person is overfunctioning and the other is underfunctioning. Where one person's needs always seem to get met or are a priority and the other person's aren't. Well, in today's episode, we are going to explore the underlying reasons that that happens and what to do about it. So let's get to it.
Welcome to the Attracting Lasting Love podcast, presented by CoachingWithRoy.com. You found the place where single adults come for mindful wisdom and insight into how to attract and create healthy, lasting, conscious relationships. And now, here's your host, the owner of CoachingWithRoy.com, number one best-selling author, certified relationship coach, and TV analyst, Roy Biancalana.
Well, hello again, and welcome to another edition of the Attracting Lasting Love podcast. My name is Roy Biancalana. I am your host, and today is part five of a six-part series that I have titled Making Sense of Life's Contradictions. And by now, I think you know what the deal is with this. We are looking at ideas that on the surface appear to be very contradictory, yet both are true. And so it's like, how do we reconcile two things that seem to be true, but yet seem to be contradicting each other? So for instance, we talked about acceptance and action. Certainly accepting reality is a very important part of life, but so is taking action. But they can appear to be contradictory. So that was week number one. We talked about thinking and feeling. They're both important, but they can feel contradictory. We talked about compassion and responsibility, right? The commitment to understanding, forgiving, having compassion, and yet being responsible, taking ownership, holding yourself to account, right? Those are both important, but they appear to be contradictory. Then we talked about the issue between judging and discerning. You know, we want to be wise, discerning people, but we don't want to be judging. So how do we work that? And then today, we're going to talk about being selfish versus unselfish. Okay, there's probably no other combination in this series that is so obviously contradictory. I mean, either you're selfish or you're unselfish. The idea to balance those or to be both just seems like, wait a minute. We might intellectually think that would be a good idea, but how in the world do you reconcile these two things? Because they are such opposites. Okay, so that's what we're doing today. And we've been saying all along that the underlying purpose of the entire series is to improve our relationship skills, our life skills, right? We've taken a little detour away from an actual conversation about how do I attract lasting love like we did in the last series. And now we're improving our relationship skills, our life skills, because frankly, if we don't have good relationship skills, even if we attract a great partner, it's going to be our skillfulness that allows the relationship to flourish and to grow and to deepen and to last. Okay? So that's been sort of the underlying purpose of this series, is to make us higher functioning beings in the world rather than being dysfunctional, you know, to some level. And speaking of dysfunction, I think the other purpose in this series has been to help all of us, including me, grow in self-awareness. You know, I think it's important because I don't think we can ever change or grow unless we have awareness of kind of what we're doing wrong or what the problem might be, right? I mean, how do you get better at playing pickleball or tennis or golf unless you kind of first know what you're doing wrong? You need a little self-awareness so that you know what you need to work on. So in a way, I think this series has been helping us also grow in self-awareness. Because even though we've been talking about, you know, finding the middle way or finding the balance between acceptance and action, thinking and feeling, compassion, responsibility, judgment, discernment, in the process, I know I have, and maybe you have, discovered that you are much better at one side than you are the other. Like it's, that's part of the goal of this, is that we come away kind of recognizing, you know, when it comes to that acceptance of reality thing and just being with what is and dropping resistance and, you know, I'm pretty good at that, but I'm not so good at like taking action, making decisions, moving forward, you know, committing to a process, being, you know, disciplined or something like that. You might find that you're a little better on the acceptance side, but for me personally, I'm much more natural on the action side. I'm really all about change and growth and achievement and getting things done and taking action. Right? So I grow in self-awareness when I recognize kind of what I'm sort of good at. I need to work on accepting reality a little bit more. I'll share you something funny that I do. And this comes from Michael Singer, because one of the things that he always is preaching is accepting reality, as most real spiritual teachers do. They know that's the starting point for any kind of meaningful life, is that if you're fighting against reality, you're just insane. So he always is encouraging people to work on accepting reality in the most playful ways. And so I got this technique from him. So if you've listened to this podcast at all, you know that one of the places in life that I allow myself to be triggered is when I'm driving in a car and other people are not driving in the way that I think they should. Yes, I have a complete philosophy of driving, and everybody is supposed to know what that is and be complying with it so that they don't drive me insane. Okay? So right there, you can hear how insane that is, because, you know, nobody is getting the memo. I've been driving a car now for, 48 years? And people are still not doing it the way I think they should. Okay. So I have to work on accepting. So what I do is when I'm driving, I have a slogan that I tell myself. And the slogan is, Roy, no swearing, accepting. No swearing, accepting. So if you were in the car with me driving down the street, and I'm at a red light, and I don't know where you are in the world, but in this country, you can turn right on a red light if there's no traffic. You don't have to wait until the light turns green. You can turn right on red. Evidently, some people don't know that. And so when I'm sitting behind you and you're not turning right when you could, because I can see there's no traffic, I have a tendency to start cursing at you. Come on, you fucking moron, turn right on red. Jesus, let's go. Right? It's the truth. Okay. I mean, it doesn't sound very spiritual, and sometimes I'm not very spiritual. There's an example. But as I recognize that all I'm doing is making myself upset and it's not doing any good, the other person really can't hear me. I've been playing with this thing where I'm behind a person in traffic and they're driving slow in the left lane or they're not turning right on red. And I feel the energy come up inside of me to start yelling or start, God damn it, what's wrong with these fucking people? Right? And I'll just say, Roy, no swearing, accepting. And I'll even start to giggle to myself because that sounds so stupid. No swearing, accepting. And I'll sit there for you know, every 5 seconds I have to repeat it. No swearing. They're still not turning right, Roy. No swearing, accepting. They're still not turning right. No swearing, accepting. Okay? So that's just an example of one stupid little way that I work on something that I'm aware of that I'm not good at. Right? I have some self-awareness because I can tell you I'm better at action than I am accepting. I'm also better at thinking than I am at feeling. I'm also better at taking responsibility and asking people to take responsibility than I am at compassion. I'm actually better at judging, just like I explained to you in the traffic situation. I'm condemning people for their driving situation. I'm better at judging than I am true discerning. And I'm better at being selfish than being unselfish. So let me ask you, can you do that? Can you go through the list and identify what you're pretty good at and what you need to work on? I think everybody listening to this podcast, you would all say, I am interested in personal growth. I mean, yeah, you want to find a life partner, but you won't be around this podcast for long if you're not interested in your own evolution, your own learning, in personal growth, right? So like, what does that mean? Well, I just described what it means. It sort of means to know what you're not very good at and say, okay, I need to improve that. I really do. I think the most effective people in the world don't work on what they're good at. They work on what they're not good at. That's hard to do because the more you work on it and focus on it, the more you get reminded of your shortcomings. I get reminded how difficult it is for me to not swear at people when I'm driving. Right? It's like, oh, I would rather not be faced with that immature caveman type part of my personality, but it's there. And if I want to live a life of any peace and well-being, well then Roy, what are you doing? You're just ruining your day. You're getting your blood pressure way up. You're just going to have a stroke one day if you keep doing this. All right. So that's what I'm asking. Like, go through the list in this series. And can you tell yourself, where do I need to work? Now, let's talk about today's topic. Are you more comfortable being selfish or unselfish? Really? What comes easier to you? What comes more natural? Now, here's the problem. Everybody thinks unselfishness is so wonderful. Everyone applauds that. Everyone thinks it's a great quality to be unselfish. So you're like, unselfish comes pretty good to me, so I'm good. I'm like, I'm an unselfish person. I'm not even sure why I need to listen to this podcast. Well, it's because you unselfish people out there know better than anyone, if you're honest, that your unselfishness can allow you to be taken advantage of. It can allow you to not get any of your needs or wants met. It can allow you to not be taken very seriously. It can allow you to go unnoticed, to be unseen. See, because when you're unselfish, you're not sort of putting yourself out there because I'm unself. So I'm unself. So I don't put myself out there. And when I don't put myself out there, then nobody sees me. Nobody notices me. Nobody responds to me. Nobody can meet my needs because I don't put them out there. So maybe the first thing we need to do is kind of take this idea that unselfishness is a wonderful quality. Maybe we need to take that down a notch or two. Maybe we shouldn't be striving to be unselfish. Maybe we should be striving to be a little bit more selfish. If you are the person who is more inclined to be unselfish, like my wife, I could summarize to you what my wife's life work should be, right? I'm good at telling other people how they're supposed to be living. And I certainly know what my wife should be working on. That woman needs to work on being more selfish. She is unbelievably unselfish. I think maybe I've shared this before. It just happens all the time that she'll be making dinner and she needs a tomato. She doesn't have one, or an onion. And she will just grab the keys. I'm sitting there, you know, watching some stupid television show or something. And she's right there in the kitchen and we're talking and she's making dinner. She does most of the cooking. She really won't allow me into the kitchen. That's where she is selfish. She won't allow me in there because I don't do things the way she thinks they should be done. So the way I am in the car is the way she is in the kitchen. There's certain ways that you do things in the kitchen and the way you handle food and the way you put things away and everything. Like, stay out of here, Roy. Get out. This is my place. I'm like, sure, baby. I would love to have you cook all the meals for me. That sounds like a good deal, right? But when she needs something, she'll just instinctively just grab the keys and head for the door. It never occurs to her to say, Roy, would you run to the store and get me an onion? It doesn't even cross her mind. So my little nickname for her is her little persona name is Little Miss I Don't Want to Be a Bother. See, she doesn't want to be a bother. She doesn't want to be a nuisance. My wife is the most un-high-maintenance person you will ever meet. You would almost think the woman doesn't need anything, that she doesn't need help with anything. I mean, really, here's one of the interesting things. Self-sufficiency and independence can be sort of weird code words for being neurotically unselfish. See if you follow my line of thinking here, because I'm just putting this together as I'm talking with you. This self-sufficiency thing, it can mask a little bit of a sense of there's an unworthiness in me, or I don't feel valuable or worthy of people's attention, of their care, of them taking care of me. So I feel unworthy. And so when you feel unworthy, it's like you become self-sufficient. I can take care of myself. I can do it myself. I don't need to bother anyone. I don't need to depend on anyone. I don't need to ask anyone for anything. Right? And so my wife, that's her issue. Is there's an unworthiness theme. And so she's Little Miss, I don't want to be a bother. So she's unselfish to a fault. She's self-sufficient to a fault. She's independent to a fault. Okay? So you have to understand selfishness and unselfishness on a spectrum. Right? In the middle, a little selfish and a little unselfish, it's good, right? We're going to talk about that in a minute. There's a balance. And a little bit of one or the other is good. But when you start getting out to the extremes where you're kind of lost in unselfishness, or when you're on the extreme and you're lost on the selfish side, that's when things become very unbalanced and very neurotic and very unhealthy. And that's where my wife can fall if she's not paying attention. She can fall into the really unselfish part. And I don't know what she needs. I don't know what she's wanting. I don't know how I can take care of her. Because she won't let on that there's any need. That's what I mean by being very unhigh maintenance. Okay, but when you're like that, well, then you don't get your needs met because you do have needs. You see, unselfish people, they actually have needs and wants, but there's something in them that won't let them put it out there because they feel unworthy, right? So they end up getting taken advantage of because sometimes unselfishness, when it's on that extreme spectrum side, means I don't have a right to set boundaries and to say no. You can't do that here. You can't treat me that way. See, you need a degree of selfishness to say stop. No, that is not okay. That will not fly around me, right? You got to have some me to put a boundary on yourself and on your life, right? But when you're in this unselfish thing, say, I don't have a right to set boundaries, or you start making excuses for people, and then you get taken advantage of, or you get run over. But you certainly become invisible because you're like a wallflower. You're just in the background. You're not putting yourself out there, and so nobody notices you. Nobody can take care of you. Nobody can love you, really, because they can't feel any you. Now, let's talk briefly about the empath, because the empath, that word is a lot like unselfish in terms of everyone feels like that's a good word. It's a good idea. It's a good quality to be empathetic, to be an empath, to be unselfish. You follow me? When's the last time you saw on Facebook or Instagram somebody doing a video on the dangers of living with an empath? How to spot an empath? 5 signs that you are in a relationship with an empath. Right? They don't exist, because the world views being empathetic and being an empath and being unselfish as a good thing. And it's not. Not when it gets off the rails. Right? To be, I guess we would want to call it mildly unselfish. To be empathetic, which means I do know I can put myself in someone else's shoes. I can feel what they're feeling. I get a sense of their situation. I mean, so there's some compassion in me. There's some commonality there. I can feel into you a little bit. But that can get way offline into a neurotic area where you get lost in other people's problems, other people's feelings. You become an enabler. You can become a savior, a rescuer, a hero, right? You're so empathetic. You're so unselfish that nobody's minding your store. You're always in other people's business. I can feel their feelings better than they can. And you can experience a kind of suffering because there is no boundary between you and them. You're so wrapped up in their lives, and you can feel their energy and their pain and their situation. Are you sensing this? So being an empath isn't necessarily a good thing, because those people very often lack a sense of self. They lack a sense of boundaries, and they lack a sense of that is you, this is me. And they lack sometimes the ability to feel their own feelings, to stand up for themselves, to say, this is me and who I am and what I want. And yes, I know what you want, right? But I matter too. That's what happens, is when you're in this unselfish side and you're on this empathetic side, you get in lopsided relationships. You matter more than me. Your needs come before mine. Your feelings before mine. It gets into this, everybody's more important than me. Because somehow we've received this message that, you know, to be a good person means you have to be unselfish. Okay? So, am I talking about you? Do you need to learn how to be more selfish? Do you need to learn how to set boundaries? Because unselfish people have boundary issues. Are you being taken advantage of? Do you feel like you go unnoticed? Do you feel sometimes resentment because you're taking care of everybody else and nobody ever takes care of you? Do you feel like you get in one-sided relationships where you're over-functioning and someone else is kind of allowed to under-function? Oh, I got it. I'll run to the store. I'll do it. I'll take care of it. Is that you? Are you on that side? Or are you a bit more like me, where you're on the narcissistic side, the selfish side? See, because you know what I was doing before, because you can go on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter and you can find dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens of posts about how to spot a narcissist, how 5 signs you're in a relationship with a narcissist. You know what I mean? That stuff is all over the place, because being selfish is bad. Being self-absorbed, being narcissistic, you know, being a person where the 3 most important people in your life are me, myself, and I. Okay? That's condemned. That's bad. That's dangerous. And I'm just here to say, being empathetic and narcissistic are 2 sides of the same coin. They're both distortions of a healthy sense of self. The empath has this unhealthy sense of no self. I don't matter. The narcissist is just the same, but on the other side. This unhealthy, overly exaggerated, the world revolves around me and what I want and what I need, and everybody exists to take care of me. See, the empath doesn't want to be taken care of because I'm not really worthy of that, but I'm going to overfunction and take care of you and be unselfish. And the narcissist is just the opposite. The world revolves around me and what I need, and, you know, F you. It's my feelings, my desires, my wants, and right? So the narcissist is self-absorption. The empath is self-negation. I guess that might be a word. So the selfish person, what's the real danger there? Well, you end up pushing people away, because people quickly begin to find out, and this is the same for the empath. Empaths push people away. Because you quickly find out that you don't end up in mutually satisfying relationships. They're one-sided. And when you're selfish, and the world revolves around you, you end up turning off people. So, for instance, I mean, if you ever experienced this, maybe this is you. You go out with your friends. You're watching a ball game, or you're meeting for a glass of wine after work. You're with a group of your friends. Are you the person that is just always talking? Always talking about yourself? And the conversation's always about you and your problems? Your friends are, you're going to find that they don't hang out with you as much. This is like, that's all they talk about is themselves. I mean, like, I kind of want someone to hear my problem. I kind of want to, you know what I mean? It's like, do you follow me? So you're going to end up pushing people away. And you also, you know, you also are just so lost in your own story that you miss opportunities to love, you know, to support others. Because you're so looking at yourself, right? The whole narcissism thing came from Greek mythology, where Narcissus looked in a pond, I think the story goes, looked in the water and saw his reflection and fell in love with himself. Meaning all that he's looking at is him. He's looking in the mirror. It's, I'm looking at me, me, me. So I'm not seeing anything around me. So narcissistic people, first of all, are not very good at discernment, because you can't discern if you're only looking at yourself. You don't notice things. You don't see patterns. You don't see people. You don't see problems. You've just got this tunnel vision on yourself and your life. So which are you? Do you err on the selfish side, the narcissistic side, as I do? Or do you err on the unselfish side, the empathetic side, as my wife does? And that's where I want to go right now. Because the law of opposites says, when you are in a polarity, you will always attract your reciprocal opposite. So if you're more narcissistic, you're going to attract an empath, and vice versa. And you see, understanding that is the way out. Because here's what happens, and you know this. People that are empaths, those are the ones putting the posts on Facebook and Instagram about how to spot a narcissist, because those empaths have a history with narcissists, right? They have personal experience with it. So they can tell you the five ways to spot it because they lived it. They were married to one or more than one, that kind of thing. The problem is, as long as you are an empath, you will only and always attract a narcissist. They go together like cookies and milk. The law of polarity, the law of opposites says it. So if you're an empath, it's not going to do you any good to get better at spotting a narcissist. It's not going to help you attract a healthy partner. Because you always attract according to your level of health. Always. It's the law of attraction. See, the law of attraction and the law of opposites, they do fit together. They sound contradictory. They don't. They're talking about two sides of the same coin. Like attracts like, in the sense that the empath is in an unhealthy, has an unhealthy sense of self. And the narcissist, the selfish person, has an unhealthy sense of self. It's overinflated. Overinflated, underinflated. So they're both unhealthy, which means like attracts like. Your level of psychological, spiritual, and emotional health attracts someone who's on that same level of health. That's what the law of attraction means. You attract after your own kind. The law of opposite says, even though you're like-minded, you're both unhealthy, there's an opposite nature to it. Your unhealth is narcissism. My unhealth is empathy. So do you see how the law of attraction and the law of opposites, they're not contradictory. They're just kind of talking about little different dimension. So this is why it's not going to do you any good to try to be able to spot a narcissist. If you're still an empath, if you think that's a healthy way of being in the world, if you're still moving in that energy, in that vibration, if you have that kind of magneticness to you, it's going to draw the narcissist towards you because they go together. You see, because if I'm really unselfish, it's not about me, it's not about me. The person you fit best with is a person who needs a partner who will agree that it's not about you, it's about me. Because that's what the narcissist is saying. It's about me, it's about me, it's about me. Right? Two narcissists would never be sexually attracted to each other. They would never really want to be in a relationship together because there would be this constant fight. It's about me. No, it's not. It's about me. No, it's about me. No, it's about me. You'd be fighting over, you know, who it's about. So when you're a narcissist and you're in this unhealthy place of life is about me, I'm self-absorbed in my needs, my wants. Well, I need someone who will agree with me. Yes, it is about you. I'm an empath. So this is how you get in lopsided relationships where one person's over-functioning, the empath, and the other person is under-functioning. I'm the narcissist. I don't have to do anything. It's all about me. They go together like cookies and milk. So it's pointless to be thinking about how do I attract a healthy person if I'm not a healthy person, right? Because that's how the law of attraction can work for you. Because for most of us, that's my thing with the law of attraction. I'm not in favor of it, not because it doesn't work. No, it's working. It's just that for most of us, it's working against us. If you're an empath, the law of attraction is you're going to find yourself attracted to one narcissist after another. I don't care how much you study narcissism. You could go to school and get a university degree in psychology and become a PhD and do your dissertation on narcissism, and you're still going to attract one if you're an empath. You can't avoid it. It's impossible. So the real question is not how do I find a healthy partner? It's how do I be a healthy partner? Because then the law of attraction works for you because you always attract someone who is as healthy as you are. So the way out for the narcissist, for the empath, is to learn to be more selfish, to let go of their I'm not worthy limiting belief. My needs don't matter. The work needs to be done where you unwind this belief that you don't want to be a bother, that you don't want to be too much. I don't want to be too much. I don't want to come on too strong. I don't want to be needy. I don't want to be, you know, telling people, I don't want to be high maintenance. The empath needs to learn from the narcissist. Can you teach me how to be so self-centered? And by the way, if you're in a relationship and you notice that you're an empath and your partner's kind of a narcissist, that's the way out. You don't break up. You look at each other and say, you know what? We're both fucked up here. You're really very selfish. Yeah, and I'm really unselfish, and I don't mean that in a good way. So I need you to tell me how to be narcissistic. And the other person needs to tell you, you need to tell me how to be more sensitive to other people's feelings and wants and be of service because I'm wrapped up in my own little world. See, then you can grow out of your extremes and meet each other in the middle, where you're walking this line between, hey, I'm here. I'm a whole self. I matter. I have needs. I have wants. I'm going to declare them. I'm an equal player. I am not getting in some unbalanced relationship. I'm not over-functioning. I'm not under-functioning. Man, I'm walking that line. I'm coming in here as a full self. I own my feelings. I own my wants. I'm not afraid to ask for them. I actually expect people to respond to them. I deserve love. I deserve attention. I deserve someone thinking about me. And at the same time, I'm here for you. Your needs matter. What you want matters. What you feel matters. I'm here to serve you, to love you. And we walk in that middle ground where it takes a high degree of presence. And we've talked about this in every other episode. When you're finding the middle way, it takes a high degree of presence to be able to access either side depending on the moment. Ah, this is a moment where I need to be more selfish. You know what? Even though I have my sense of self here, and I'm not diminishing myself, this moment calls for unselfishness. And I can bring that part of myself online. So I have both self and unself present within me. And I'm present enough in my life to know which is necessary and when. And I work that. And I work that. And maybe I make mistakes, right? But I'm in the consciousness to where I matter and you matter. We both matter. It's equal. My needs are not more important than yours. Yours aren't more important than mine. But from moment to moment, I might say, you know what? I'm going to set aside what I need or what I want right now, because love would demand me to be unselfish in this situation. Or at other times, you recognize, no, love demands that I be selfish. I need something right now, and I need to ask for it. And I need to expect that people will be there for me. So love would demand that I ask for what I need, that I receive support because I'm worthy of it. And sometimes love would demand you setting yourself aside. So what do you need? The easiest way to see this is when you have a new baby. I mean, your needs matter, don't they? Yes, you're a new mother. But that little baby, you got to set aside your need for sleep sometimes, because it's almost a phase of life where being unselfish is necessary. That's what love would call you to do. You got to get your sleep where you can. You got to do what you can. But you have to give yourself to that little child. You follow me? So that's just an example. That's an easy example to understand that. And I think most people do. But then you get in adult relationships and we're skewed one side or the other. And if we are more balanced, it just gets more difficult. It's so obvious when there's a dependent little child. But now you're in a relationship with an adult who's not dependent, not in that way, right? So then it just takes some skill, which is what we're doing here, some skill to know in this moment, is it requiring me to be selfish, or is it requiring me to be unselfish? And again, the narcissist doesn't have the choice. They're locked in their me, 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 and they can't respond to love in the moment. And that creates all kinds of drama and problems. And the empath doesn't have the ability to respond to love in the moment if it requires more selfish action, because they don't have that part of themselves online, and it causes all kinds of problems. So where do we begin? We begin by being honest enough to declare, what side do you fall on? And if you're not sure, ask someone who's been in a relationship with you. Because they know. Ask your sister or your brother. Ask your parents. Ask an ex. They'll tell you. They probably have been telling you. If you're a narcissist, people have told you that. I've been told that. If you're unselfish to a fault, you've been told that. Like one of the things that my wife does, this might help some of you unselfish people. She has a tendency, because she diminishes what she wants and needs, is that when, and I think I shared this before, when she might want something or she's thinking of something, she'll ask a question. Hey, Roy, how do you feel about going to a movie on Friday? Or how do you feel about going out to eat tonight? And I can hear that because I know her, right? And in that moment, love would ask me to see if maybe I can help her wake up out of something there. And I say, baby, I get the sense you already know what you want. Why don't you tell me what you want to do? And then I'll check in with myself as to what I want. And then we'll try to figure out how we can both get what we want. And then very often she'll say, you're right, right. I want to go out to eat tonight. How do you feel about that? Oh, I said, I love that. Thank you. Thank you. Just saying that pleases me. Yes, I'd love to go to dinner tonight. Or I've got clients between 4 o'clock and 8 o'clock. So unless you want to go to dinner at 8:30 at night, which I know you don't normally want to do, can't do it. Oh, okay. Right? So one of the things that unselfish people do is they ask questions. They're sneaky. They appear to be loving and sweet. And what do you want? What do you want? But they already know what they want. So the conscious move is just to be honest. I want this. Now, what do you want? And then you get to work toward what are called win-win relationships. See, when you're a narcissist or an empath, you end up in this dysfunctional, out of balance, over-functioning, under-functioning relationship. One person gets what they want and the other one doesn't. The other person gets what they want, but you don't. These are relationships that are compromise. We compromise in our relationship. That's a bad sign. Compromise is win-lose. When you compromise and agree, okay, I will lose and you will win. In other words, you'll get what you want and I won't. You end up on some level keeping score. And then the next time something comes up, it's like, you know what? I kind of sucked it up last time. This is your turn to suck it up, right? And if you feel like the score ever gets really unbalanced, like I've sucked it up about 30 times and you have like 3 times, then you have all this kind of drama because you're in a compromise relationship. See, healthy relationships, compromise is a bad word because that means somebody's losing. In a healthy relationship, there's a commitment. How can we both get what we want? What I want's important. What you want is important. Let's put our heads together. Let's get some curiosity and wonder going here, and let's figure out how we can both win. How can we be in a mutually supportive relationship? You can't do that when you're stuck in the extremes. That's what it means to be a healthy person, is I have myself and my unself. You have yourself and unself. So I'm coming to you with something that I want, and you come to me with something you want. Oh, okay. How can we figure this out to where we both get what we want? See how beautiful that is? But that takes work. But more than that, it takes a commitment to live that way, right? To see it that way. You have to be committed to a win-win dynamic. Like, that's the way I want to show up in a relationship. I don't want to get in these over-functioning, under-functioning, codependent things. I want a co-committed relationship, a co-creative one, where both of us are getting what we want. And if you're in a relationship and you're both healthy and you're both wanting to have a win-win and you can't figure out how you both can get what you want, all that means is you're incompatible. It just means you're with the wrong person. It doesn't mean you then subvert what you want to stay in the relationship. It's the wrong relationship. Because in the right relationship, both people get their needs met. Both people get what they want. Nobody's giving up anything of significance to be in the relationship. No one's giving up a direction, a desire, or making a decision to where they lose. We're in this relationship because both of us can be more of who we are together than we could be apart. Hear that. The essence of a good relationship is that I can be a better version of me by being with my wife, not a less version. And she can be a better version of her because she's with me. In other words, if you could be a better person, more effective, more productive, more conscious, more mindful, more loving by being single, then you should be single. If being in a relationship would make you less than you are, you shouldn't be in a relationship. You want to be in a relationship where you recognize you make me want to be a better man. Remember that line from As Good As It Gets? Jack Nicholson? It's kind of a cheesy line, but it gets at a real conscious relationship. You make me want to be a better woman. I'm a better woman because I'm with you. I get to be more of myself, to explore who I am, to make my contribution, to be in this world and give my gifts. And the guy's like, I'm a better version of me because you're my woman. Because with you, I can express myself more fully. I can give my gifts more deeply. I can live my purpose more powerfully. Right? So you only get into a relationship if both of you are better because of it. But if you're less, if it's a win-lose, if there's not an equality, if there's not a mutual honoring of each other's needs and wants and dreams and hopes and perspectives, that's not the right relationship. So when two people are committed to win-win, they will normally find a way. If you can't find a way, it's just because you're probably incompatible. I mean, I give you an extreme example. Someone grows up and they're like, you know, I really want to go serve with the Red Cross, with indigenous people in Africa. That's what I want to do with my life. I just feel like that's my gift to give, is I want to go work in the Red Cross overseas. And the other person's like, I want to raise cattle in Wyoming and have a big farm and a big ranch. Okay. Well, we both can't do that. Does someone have to give up what they want? Hell no. You just don't be together. Listen, here's something my coach told me, and I'll wrap up with this. The most important thing in your life is your own sense of aliveness. Right? When it comes down to it, you come in, you're born in this world by yourself, you die by yourself. When it comes down to it, you are the one who's responsible for your aliveness. Right? Nobody else lives inside there but you. It's your little kingdom in there. You are responsible for your aliveness. And if you're in a relationship that is suppressing that, you're in the wrong relationship. Your aliveness takes precedence over a relationship. if you have to lose yourself to be in the relationship, it's the wrong relationship. Now, we're not talking about raising children, because there's a sense of kind of losing yourself when you're raising kids, right? But that's different, and you're choosing that, right? I mean, so you don't have to do it, I guess, but I'm talking about adult relationships. It's your responsibility to manage your aliveness. And if your aliveness is being compromised by the relationship, then you need to address that. That, hey, something's out of balance here. I'm over-functioning. I'm under-functioning. This doesn't feel mutual. This doesn't feel really supportive. I feel like I'm being less than I'm called to be. I'm not expressing myself. I'm not offering my gifts. I'm not being the man or woman in the world that I am. And so I need this relationship to change in some ways because I can't live that way. And so then maybe a couple goes into a therapy, maybe coaching, maybe something to work out how both people can be fully alive and be together. But if you can't be fully alive and together, then which goes? I'm just here to tell you, you can't drop yourself. You can't drop your aliveness for the relationship. It won't work. It sounds good. It sounds unselfish. It won't work. There will be resentment there and all kinds of problems. You got to find a way to be together where you are more of yourself than you would be apart. Now, does that take some coaching? Oh boy, you bet your ass it does. Okay? That's an ongoing exploration in every relationship. You're always tweaking and adjusting these things. It's not a one-time thing, but it starts with the commitment that I'm both selfish and unselfish. And I move in that middle ground. And I really only want to be in a relationship that honors that dynamic, to where there's not a win-lose. Hey, we're win-win here. Now let's do the hard work of finding out how we as a couple can make that be true for us. That's when you end up being happy in a relationship. Does that make sense? Okay. So next week, we're going to have a little fun by talking about maybe the biggest polarity there is in the universe. And that is between the masculine and the feminine. And that's one conversation where we are not going to be trying to find the balance and a little bit of masculine, a little bit of feminine, mix it together into a sweet soup. No, we're not putting different ingredients in. This is going to be a conversation about magnifying one or the other if you want to attract lasting love. All right, until next week, bye-bye.
You've been listening to Attracting Lasting Love with Roy Biancolana. Be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss a single episode. And while you're at it, please leave a rating and review and share it with anyone you think might benefit from listening. Check out our website at coachingwithroy.com and tune in every week for more insights and wisdom on creating healthy, lasting, conscious relationships.